Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumping James Herbert, jumping on for the third straight day, and I got news for you.
Is it about George Karl?
George Karl is not going to be fired, but he may have been fired by the time this is posted.
We're just going to say that every day.
I feel like that's the best way to reverse jinx him into staying into a job. So at some point, like, I guess I'm his agent now, and he owes me like 8%.
You're his agent, so you're the one that talked about wanting Bobby Jackson to get fired.
Right. Warren Legarry went hard.
You are Warren Legarry.
Oh, my God.
Summer League's great. Thank you.
Yeah. I love Warren. Warren's really nice guy to talk to, at least because I haven't said that George Karl should be fired on television. So maybe that's why it's a working relationship. But, yeah, George Karl staying with the Kings because he talked Vlade into talking Vivek into not – firing him. And
well, apparently he got the phone call. This was from the Mark Spear story that Karl took a phone call at lunch from Vlade and thought that the phone call was going to be, "Hey, you're fired."
And what a great tone. Like, "Hey, George, you're fired. Just wanted to see how you were doing.
You're done. You've been liberated from the Kings." But apparently it was the opposite.
Right.
And thus everything's great. There are no problems in Sacramento. And I expect them to make the playoffs and for us to never talk about their dysfunction ever again, right?
Sure, something like that.
Yeah.
It's apparently Vlade like said some things about what he wanted the team to work on, and one of them was like defense. Which yeah.
Half the game.
Yeah. I mean, they're a bad defense. I can't imagine George Karl is out there saying, like, "Guys, don't worry about the defense, man, we're just gonna score." I know he's an offensive-minded coach, but I don't think that's been happening. Maybe Vlade had specific ideas on how to fix the defense.
Maybe.
And that's what they talked about. And I think three-point defense was maybe emphasized within that conversation. Yeah. You don't want to give up the more points. I'll say that. That's good coaching. That's probably exactly a direct quote from Vlade. Don't give up the more points.
The more points.
So congratulations.
Yeah, I feel really great about our discussion about George Karl yesterday.
Oh my God.
We just totally nailed it. We didn't waste our time at all.
Literally, as I was about to hit publish on the post, like, podcast was posted to whatever feeds and internet tubes it has to go into, and I had written out the post for the podcast, and as I was clicking publish, I just saw I saw our notification for our Slack go up or something like that, and looked and saw you guys like tweeting about George Karl staying. I was like, "You gotta be kidding me."
Like, we had just finished talking about how, you know, there's no way they can go back from this.
Right.
And we
should have
like
known
the game,
better.
Like, how bad can it get each time?
We should have known better. That's on us.
I mean, I'm on record saying you can't come back from snake in the grass emojis. And maybe, apparently you can.
Maybe you're just bad at this. Maybe you're roping me into this cycle of not trusting the Kings to do a certain thing. And then you talk me into it. You're very persuasive. That's what I'll say.
Or maybe you just can't take responsibility for having your own opinions about George Karl and the Kings.
Nah, I wouldn't say that.
That lack of accountability in and of itself makes you a perfect Sacramento King, arguably.
I am from there.
There you go.
Maybe I've just grown up in the culture.
Yeah, poisonous culture.
Poisonous culture.
I've seen that word used a bunch of times about Sacramento in the past few days, and that's just you never want the word poisonous associated with your organization or your locker room.
It makes sense though with the whole snake in the grass emoji stuff, because some snakes are poisonous.
Absolutely.
Some grass is poisonous.
Yeah, I mean the wrong grass, definitely poisonous, dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know, that's true. I'm not a botanist, but I feel
like I'm gonna go ahead and say that poisonous grass is out there and you should watch out for it.
Yeah. Especially on other planets.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you should stay on your home planet. And more than that, just stay on your couch and read articles about the NBA and listen to NBA podcasts.
Yeah, specifically the Ion Basketball podcast where we control the pigs.
We control all of the pigs here.
So congrats to George Karl. Hopefully you're not fired by the time this has been posted. But I feel confident. I feel good. I think he keeps it.
I don't feel anything anymore.
I think he makes it through the All-Star break.
The Kings have me totally numb. I'm just like, anything they do now, I'm just like, sure, okay, cool.
That whole story has become like the scene in What About Bob where he's interested or he's introduced to the Baby Steps book. So he's just like baby steps to the door, baby steps to turning the handle, baby steps to the elevator, baby steps to, you know, getting on the elevator. Like, it's seriously like just don't fire George Karl before the All-Star break. Don't fire George Karl before the trade deadline. Don't fire George Karl before March. Like, that's all it's going to have to be.
Well, I mean, as everyone always tells us, you just got to take it one day at a time.
It's like I've said, you know, Vlade Divac is the Richard Dreyfuss of the NBA.
You have always said that.
He's the Dr. Leo Marvins of the NBA. Hey, we got a ton of bad news to get through on this podcast today.
This is going
to
be the most depressing.
This podcast
sad.
Sucks. I guess we could start with we'll start with Jimmy Butler, who thankfully is not out for the season because that injury looked really bad.
It was scary when it happened.
He went down. He wouldn't come out of the game right away. Like, he went and shot his free throws. I think he went 1 of 2, and then they fouled, and then they brought the. I haven't seen that wheelchair before.
I called it a cart.
It looked like a rickshaw.
It was very rickshaw-esque.
Yeah, like I was expecting like Kramer or Newman to be pulling that thing down the street. Like that was a. I'm not up on my wheelchair technology, so. I hadn't seen that one before, but it makes sense because it looked like it stabilized the leg a little bit more than a wheelchair would.
I mean, there were wheels.
There were wheels.
It was a chair.
It looked like a chair.
So technically, it's a wheelchair, but just if someone said the word wheelchair, that contraption would not be what came to mind.
Yeah,
that
doesn't come to mind. But so then he was out, and just the way it happened, you think, we automatically kind of think now, oh, that's an ACL. Thankfully, it's not. He's out, what, 3 to 4 weeks?
Yeah. It's a bit of a weird one, though, because it was really scary at the time. And then there were reports, oh, he thinks he might only miss a game or two, or the Bulls think he might only miss a game or two. And I was like, all right, well, this wasn't a big deal. And then you get hit with the 3 or 4 weeks, and it's like, oh, okay, so their season just radically changed.
Yeah, I don't think...
And the trade deadline is coming up, and I don't know if this affects it, but they're in a weird place, and they could certainly use some help.
Yeah, but what do you deal to get help? Pow, but you don't have any big men anymore. Like, Noah's out. Mirotić is out. I guess you can rely on, like, Taj and Portis and McDermott and Barstow, but...
I mean, Pow's the guy that I would at least explore the trade market for.
If their intention is to make the playoffs, I don't know you can afford to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it might not help them in the short term, right? Because, especially without Butler, like, you need someone to be the focal point of that offense,
yeah.
And... Rose, while he's played better lately, is not necessarily that guy.
Well, he's played better, but they've been worse with him,
mm-hmm.
Which is weird.
So, I mean, I think your New Year's resolution for them was to consider trading Rose, right?
Yeah,
so,
I don't know what you get from him. I mean,
I don't know.
He's 25 mil. I guess technically to make the money work, you could trade him for Joe Johnson. And then at least you have Joe Johnson. Who's not that good anymore, but he's serviceable.
He's been better since the start of the... I mean, he's been better since Hollins was let go, honestly.
He
hit that ridiculous game winner. I mean, he can still help you. I think at this point, you'd rather he was like a really good bench player that came in and like beat on the second units. Like,
By the way, I am not advocating for them to trade Rose for Joe Johnson. I'm just trying to think of what money would work and what would be a realistic deal.
Yeah, I'm not advocating for anything in particular. I just think they should see what they can get for some of these guys. And even Gibson, you see what you can get, even though he's still a good player.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're married to this team anymore. I think Butler's clearly the franchise player now, and he's out for a little bit, and we'll see. Maybe they don't do anything, and they go into the playoffs, and it's kind of the same story as always, is they're pretty good, but probably not good enough to get to the finals. They haven't been good enough to get to the finals.
Joe Johnson's numbers are better than I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not scoring a lot. He's just under 12 points a game, but four assists.
Because he was shooting so horribly to start the year.
Yeah, 4.1 assists, 3.9 rebounds in 34 minutes. He's shooting 40.2% from the field, 37% from three, which is better than I thought he was. 84% from the line. I mean, I don't know. I could be talked into this now.
It sounds like you are now advocating.
Yeah. You throw out, you know, you've got Aaron Brooks and Kirk Heinrich to run the point. Joe Johnson can play a little lead guard.
Etuan Moore can apparently play 1, 2, and 3.
Etuan Moore, that guy is good.
He's playing really well.
I didn't realize, like, he has dramatically improved his field goal percentage every single year of his career.
Yeah. And he's kind of come out of nowhere this season.
And he's a really good defender.
Yeah.
Maybe. Hey, maybe I should get Gar Foreman and Mikhail Prokhorov on the phone together.
Yes, you're the perfect guy to broker a deal.
I could figure this out.
Yeah.
You just have to get phone numbers, and then it's just getting them to pick up. That's all that is.
What did you think of Pau replacing Butler in the All-Star game?
I'm trying to think of who else I thought should make it. So who would be the candidates there?
For me, Horford would have been my number one choice, and then I think you'd have to consider Kemba.
Yeah, I actually kind of expected Kemba to make it when I saw that Butler was going to miss. I just figured either Kemba or Batum. I didn't really even consider Powell. So that was a bit of a shock to me. Yeah, I guess Horford would be my number one.
I think Horford's still like one of the most solid all-around big men. Yeah. And I think he's been better than Powell. Maybe the scoring numbers tilted it. Maybe it was just the fact they wanted to replace a bull with a bull. I don't know. I'm certainly not going to get mad at the fact that Powell's in the game. But I think if you want to look at who has a bigger impact at both ends of the court, to me, Horford would have been the no-brainer. I had him on my All-Star team initially, I think, when I picked my team. But, yeah, whatever. I mean, Powell kind of, you know, I'm trying to, like, properly describe, like, what the state of Powell's game is, because I feel like in Chicago people are sort of off of him, especially because of what he hasn't done on the defensive end. But I mean, for a big man who's been in the league as long as he's been there, to still be as much of a threat on offense as he is, and to still have that post game and that passing and everything, like, it's impressive the way that he's lasted and the way that his game has remained so sharp. It's just
2 years ago I thought he was done. Just watching the way he walks and the way he moves, like, I didn't expect that he could still be this nimble.
Yeah, and he came to Chicago, and I thought last year he started out really well.
Yeah,
and it took a while for people to kind of be like, I don't know about his impact on the team overall because of his defense. And I think maybe he's been a bit better this year on that end, but that's still an issue for me. So I'm kind of balancing those two things where I'm like, yeah, I want to give Powell the respect he deserves for, like, playing the way he is, but also I think, like, for the reasons that I mentioned, if I was Chicago, that's why I mentioned, like, maybe I'd look at trading him, or I'd look at what's out there.
Yeah, I mean, I do think you have to try to figure out what kind of return, because he's going to opt out, right? And then he'll get paid. Do you feel comfortable, even on a 2-year contract, do you feel comfortable giving him, I don't know, $15 million a year, $16 million? I mean, he could get a pretty big contract.
I'd be surprised if Chicago was the one to pay him that.
Yeah. But, you know, they are in trouble. I mean, no Butler for 3 to 4 weeks, and they're already in the seventh seed. They're only a game and a half ahead of Charlotte, who's in ninth.
Yeah.
I mean, the playoffs definitely aren't guaranteed for them by any means.
No, not in the East, where there's so many teams that are right there.
It's crazy. They're only 2.5 out of the third.
It's so weird. Yeah.
But I don't think they're going to go on a surge without Jimmy Butler. He's pretty good.
I feel like if you just took at any point in the season, if you just went up to a random NBA fan and said, who's the third seed in the East, people wouldn't know. Because it changes so often.
I wouldn't know. I know Cleveland, Toronto is 1-2. And then after that, I mean, I've had some people, I've been on, you know, some radio shows lately where people are like, so who do you think's the second best team in the East? And I've just said, like, I don't know, what day is it? Because it changes every day. I mean, I probably would have guessed the Hawks.
Well, it's the Celtics now, and then the Hawks are fourth.
Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Celtics, not that long ago, because of how they are, because they seem to win 3, then lose 3, then win 5, then whatever.
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, 7th or 8th not that long ago. And that's just how this thing goes. The Bulls were solidly in 2nd for a little bit. I think the Raptors, where they are now, they've created more separation for that 2nd spot than anybody else at any point this year. So you have to kind of give them that respect.
They're almost in the 1.
Pardon me?
They're almost in the 1.
Yeah.
Only two games back. Wow.
Yeah, but after that, I think it's just kind of whoever.
Yeah, it's just hodgepodge. I mean,
as a separate thing, that's why I think the Hawks shouldn't go crazy and trade everybody, but that's sort of neither here nor there. The Bulls are in a weird situation. I don't think they should necessarily panic, but I'm sure they'll be active around the trade deadline, and I'm sure we're going to hear rumors about lots of different guys on that roster.
Yeah. I don't know. This sucks for the Bulls. And Jimmy Butler's just
the worst.
He's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, and he's, I mean, his job is so difficult. Yeah. I think we've talked about this before. Like,
yeah, his job is very difficult.
On both ends. I think on, as impressive as he looks offensively on this team, if he was on a different team and he had a bit better spacing, a bit more help, whatever, I think you could see him just, I'm not sure the numbers would necessarily be better because he wouldn't be able to carry this much of a, he wouldn't have to carry this much of a load, but I think he'd be even more efficient. He'd just be a better player and he would have more room to operate than he does, because I think on this particular team, he's often looking at situations where he has to make tough shots and he has to make difficult plays and he has to face double teams and he has to do a lot of stuff that on a different team he wouldn't necessarily have to do. And that wasn't necessarily the plan for him. That's just kind of evolved.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we're way beyond that question of like, is he the leader of the team? Is he the franchise player? Blah, 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 blah.
He might, like, be one of the he might be one of the 10 best players in the league. I mean, he's in that conversation.
He and his scoring explosions this year. I mean, he had one against Philly where he scored, what, 53, 54?
Something like that. My favorite one's against Toronto where he got hit in the, he wasn't having a good game. He got hit in the mouth. He's like, all right, now it's go time.
Yeah, I was at that game. That was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. 40 points and a half. Like, that is nuts.
It reminded me of the scene in Beer Fest where one of the guys' black eyes was, like, going away. And so they just kept punching him in the eye to keep that motivation for their beer training. That's what I feel like Jimmy Butler, like, if Barstow's job should just be to punch Jimmy in the mouth, like, every 4 weeks.
Well, who's to say that wasn't what happened afterwards?
True, maybe it's still going. Maybe that'll be his motivation to work his way back from the injury. They'll just keep getting punched in the mouth.
Yeah, because otherwise, how is he going to get the energy to go through the rehab?
Exactly.
And handle things properly? You just gotta keep things real.
You do. All right, so that's a crappy situation for the Bulls. Another crappy
situation. It sucks for Butler that he misses All-Star again.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he played there last year, but I mean that he misses All-Star along with missing all these games.
Yeah. All right, the next bad injury, Marc Gasol has a broken foot and is out indefinitely. Some think it may be the rest of the season. They're screwed if this is the case.
This is so bad. And I saw somebody tweeted, like, oh, like, they hope Brandon Wright will be back soon. And I'm like, I like Brandon Wright's game a lot. And in a system where the floor is spaced properly, he's, like, an awesome offensive weapon in the pick and roll. And we saw that in Dallas.
For 18 minutes a game, because he gets hurt if he plays more than that.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. And also, it's just, like, he doesn't fit that well on this team.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make that much of a difference to make up for the presence of Marc Gasol.
Right.
Like, this is a huge blow. The team had issues anyway. I know they've, as Matt Moore has documented in detail, they've rebounded better. They've defended better. They've kind of got back to who they are after the slow start. But if they were going to do any sort of damage this season, then I think it had to be with everything revolving around Marc Gasol, and with him probably being more aggressive than he has been on offense and scoring a little more and being that dominant defender that was almost universally regarded as the best defensive player in the league a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And without that, I don't know. Like, I worry about this season. I worry about beyond this season as well.
Yeah, especially with a guy that big, you have to, once you get that foot injury, I don't know. It feels like we see a lot of times where that becomes recurring. Not that it ends up ending a career necessarily. I mean, sometimes it does, but it feels like, you know, that becomes like a 2-3 year problem.
No, but it's just scary.
Yeah,
and it's also scary when you think about Mike Conley's future there, and what will they do with Zebo, and what will the identity of this team be a year from now? Maybe it'll still be exactly the same, and they'll keep Conley, and we don't need to freak out about this, but I just feel like this Memphis season has just had so many little bumps in it, and and now this is like way more than a little bump.
I will say, I don't think it affects the Conley situation.
No?
No, I think he'll... I think he's going to stay or leave based on things outside of Marc Gasol's injury. Like, let's say... I mean, they're not... They're also in danger of missing the playoffs. They're only 4.5 ahead of Portland. And that's the 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's kind of a hodgepodge as well, to use that term again, which is fun.
Great term.
I don't know what it... It apparently comes from hodgepodge.
Is it?
Which, by association with the name Hodge, which is a nickname for the given name Roger, and is an archaic British term used as a name for a typical agricultural worker. And that's somehow they got that to mean a confused mixture.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps on that road. A
lot of steps in that road. But Memphis, back to Memphis. Memphis is, they're not guaranteed the playoffs, certainly.
Not anymore.
Especially not now. I don't think missing the playoffs means Mike Conley goes, well, I'm out of here. I think he's either going to...
Not necessarily. I think
he's going to stay or leave based on the same information he had before the injury.
He should. Yeah. I just...
Like, if he let's just say he goes and signs with, I don't know, Dallas.
Sure.
This offseason. I don't think you look back at this injury and say that was the point where Mike Conley decided to leave.
No, I think he'll... I think he's probably trying not to think about it, honestly.
Right.
I think he'll look at it at the end of the year. I just think it would bode well for the Grizzlies if they went into that free agency having had a successful season.
Yeah.
And having done some damage in the playoffs. It doesn't mean they have to get to the conference finals necessarily or whatever, but I think if they had Marc Gasol, if they could just collectively be feeling good about the situation, then maybe it's a different story. And it's just like last year, and I'm not saying it's the same thing because Conley will make his own decision, like you said, but when we talk about the Blazers breaking up, the point that everybody always goes back to is the Wesley Matthews injury. Because that's what turned the season. That's what kind of sunk the ship. And after that, that was kind of it for them. And if they had kept playing the way they were playing, because they were playing really well, and if they had a really great postseason, then maybe Aldridge stays. Maybe Batum is never traded.
But
what's
a really good postseason for them? They weren't making the conference finals.
I mean, they could have. They were playing really well.
That team was not making the conference finals.
I think it was possible.
I don't think it was.
I don't think they were that much worse than the Rockets, who did make the conference finals. Like,
I do.
I mean, I'm just saying that maybe nobody would have said when Matthews went down, oh, this is the end of the Blazers as we know them, right?
Right.
And I'm not sure it necessarily was. Like, there were other factors, obviously.
Yeah, I think there are factors that weigh in way heavier than that.
But I do think there's a reason why people always go back to that. I mean, Neil O'Shea himself has pointed back to that moment.
Yeah, because what's he going to say? Like,
no, but other players have, too, that were there.
I don't know. I think we put too much emphasis on random in-season stuff that doesn't really have to do with the makeup of the team. In terms of personalities and stuff.
Maybe.
Like, like even talking about this now, saying, like, hey, maybe this leads to Mike. Like, Mike Conley's not thinking about free agency right now.
No, he's not.
You know, all these guys are focused on the next game and all that, you know, all the cliches. They're cliches for a reason. You know, this is what they think about. This is what you have to think about in order to be as good as they are game to game. And I think that once everything's done, like, let's say they make the playoffs and they fall the 8 seed and they lose the Warriors in 4 games and that's their season.
Yeah.
I don't think the week after that series is over, Mike Conley looks back and goes, "Man, February, Marc Gasol broke his foot. I'm out." You know, like, I just don't think that, I don't think that's what happens.
No, I don't think it happens like that. The decisions will be made when they need to be made. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Doom and Gloom about the Grizzlies. It's just, I think even before this happened, it was a valid question to be asked about how long will this team stay together.
Right.
And I don't think this, which probably dooms their season this year, I don't think that helps. So the question was already being asked.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like, if this is the last season that we see this core, then I mean, honestly, then like before this injury, that might be the last time that we've seen this core, right? So
yeah,
it's worth like thinking about. It's not a fun thought.
Right.
I've loved the Grit and Grind Grizzlies, and I hope they find a way to bring Conley back and kind of tinker with it and keep the same similar identity, even if they make moves. But
I will
say
this.
It's been a strange run this year for them.
I have not enjoyed the Grit and Grind Grizzlies except for their fourth quarters. I really don't like watching that basketball for the first three quarters, but if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, then I'm talking like over the last 4 years, then I'm really into it.
I don't want every team to play the same.
It's tough watching that team for 48 minutes.
Sometimes, yeah.
It really is.
And they try to make it that way.
They absolutely do, and they're very good at it. They've been very good, I think very successful at playing that style. I'm just saying from like an aesthetic standpoint.
No, I get
I've like quarters 1 through 3, I'm like, oh my God. Like what?
No, I'm not saying housewives show. The same way I like the Warriors. I like that there are different styles in the
NBA. No,
and
me too.
I like that they've been around.
I'd much rather watch them in the fourth quarter than 1 through 3.
Yeah, okay, I can agree with that.
Do you think they make the playoffs?
Yeah, but I think it's close. I think they'll be challenged, and I think they will fall from where they are, and they'll get the 7th or 8th seed.
Yeah.
If they do end up missing it, it wouldn't shock me anymore. Before the Mark injury, I would have said, yeah, they'll make it.
Yeah, like, I think absolutely they make were a lock it. To me. Yeah.
Yeah, like they had just made enough progress throughout the season that I didn't think that was a question anymore, even though earlier on in the season it was. But yeah, I think now I'd say it's better than 50-50, but maybe not that much better. Maybe it's 60-40.
Here's what I'll say. I think either them or the Rockets fall out.
Wow.
I think Portland, Utah, and Dallas are all making it.
Interesting. Hey, remember when before the season I said I thought the Blazers could be pretty good and you laughed at me?
I don't know that I laughed at you.
I think
I definitely disagreed.
I think you laughed a little bit. I think you should admit that you laughed.
I mean, it also helps that 500 will make the playoffs.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, it does.
I'm kind of leaning towards the Rockets. Well, before I was definitely leaning towards the Rockets falling out. But now it's hard to ignore that Marc Gasol injury.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
Hey, the Utah Jazz team is pretty good, by the way. Won 7 in a row.
What has your Utah Jazz experience been like?
They're a very smart team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what...
I mean, on the court, off the court?
Both. Like, just the way they approach everything is very intelligent. Very even keel, which can be boring because, you know, the wins... You're not too high on the wins, you're not too low on the losses. But they're just a really... It's just a smart approach to everything they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Team building, the way the offense goes, the way defense goes, the way they're working guys in, the way they're developing young guys. You just see the long-term vision, and I don't know what the ceiling is for that long-term vision. It may not be a championship style, you know, 4 or 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, depending on what they do. And also, like, you do have to remember that there's no Dante Exum. And you can look at him last year and be like, well, Dante wasn't any good. Defensively, he was a monster. And there are a lot of nights where point guards are tearing them up because it's Howell Neto, who's all right, and it's Trey Burke, who's not good defensively. And you just think about, man, if they had that 6'6 point guard out there defending, that dude right away could defend. So, yeah.
Who also, let's look back at what he did before he got to the NBA and the kind of way that we looked at him as an offensive player and the projections that we put on him, like that wasn't for nothing.
Right.
Like, I don't think he is destined to be a subpar offensive player at all.
No, I think he's probably especially it's tricky with the ACL injury now, but I think like 3 or 4 years from now, you'll see him offensively be like pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Which over the next 2 years, people won't see that. Because he's going to struggle coming back from the ACL injury and then getting back up to speed and what they're going to ask him to do and everything. But eventually I do think he's going to get there, and he'll be fun.
Yeah, no, I loved him as a prospect. I liked what I saw from him last year, even though there was a learning curve, obviously, as a first-year point guard.
Yeah.
But I like
He was also like he didn't try to do too much, you know. Like it wasn't, and I don't even
I always wanted him to be more aggressive and to almost be willing to screw up more.
Yeah, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but like he wasn't Emmanuel Mudiay out there, where I think both approaches can work. Like he just kind of did what he was asked to do. He didn't try to do too much, and he was kind of out of the way offensively. Whereas Mudiay, he is trying to do everything, and he's trying to do maybe too much at times. And there's learning cachet within that, right? Where you get to troubleshoot things out and figure out what works and what doesn't. You can see already that Mudiay is making progress with that, and he is learning what works, and he is. But it's kind of funny how those two dynamics can work for different players.
Yeah, their approaches couldn't be more different, but they're both super talented. I wonder about the Jazz with the trade deadline because they have a lot of pieces.
Yeah,
and there's kind of a hole at point guard, even though it's a temporary one. And I wonder if it's worth it to make a move now and try to push to just get better for this season and be a serious threat in the playoffs now, or to just stay the course and let these young guys grow together, wait for Exum to come back, kind of count on him and Burke splitting point guard duties next year. Maybe Nato will still be around. And just doing it that way. I would lean toward playing it safe and just kind of keeping this group together and letting it grow. But I definitely see the temptation because of how good this group can be and how balanced the team kind of is. That you look at it and you're like, if they just had a really good point guard, then they could be something special sooner. So I understand playing with the trade machine and trying to come up with scenarios for them, but I just think it's a weird thing to kind of lay, and it's a good problem to have.
Yeah,
because they're going to be pretty damn good in a couple of years regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them moving Burke, but I think any conversation of trying to acquire a point guard that ends up, you know, asking for Rodney Hood will not happen. You know, I wouldn't say Hood's untouchable, but you have to really like you'd have
be close
to be
untouchable.
Yeah, you'd have to be really, you know, inquiring about giving them a very good point guard in order to get Hood. And even if the conversation has to start with Alec Burks, I don't know that that's happening.
Yeah.
Who's also injured, by the way, so that kind of screws things up. But
I think people have forgotten maybe that Alec Burks looked pretty good before he got hurt.
Yeah, he can play. He's a really good six man.
I think it's quite a luxury to have Hayward and Burks and Rodney Hood on the wing.
And then, by the way, Favors and Gobert behind them.
Which is just monstrous.
It's a good makeup of a team. We still have more bad news to get through, though. And we only have about 10, 15 minutes. So
Tyreek
is probably done for the season with knee surgery.
Just what a crappy year for the Pelicans.
Yeah, I'm writing about...
I can't believe how bad this has gone.
I'm writing about Anthony Davis for tomorrow. It does just feel like... It feels like a wasted year.
Can we spoil your Anthony Davis piece a little?
I guess so. Sure.
Like, he hasn't actually gotten worse, right? Like, it's just that he hasn't done what everybody thought, and the team has been, like, annoying and bad. Am I crazy?
No, it's... What's your take? It's funny. Like, I've always hated the KG comparison because I've always looked at Davis as more of, like, the super Marcus Camby. And also, like, the playmaking stuff really bothers me. But you're right. Like, he isn't – like, his shooting percentage is worse, but he's also taking way more threes – well, not way more threes, but he's taking more threes now than he did in the past. So, like, I think you can kind of account that into the field goal percentage being down. But, yeah, his numbers are still, like, kind of the same. And we were we freaked out about him last year, right? Because they won 45 games, made the playoffs by default, and, like, he was awesome. Like, he was so fun to watch. And this year, he's still pretty fun to watch, but it's... the team isn't. And it does remind me of some of those, like, you know, 2000 to 2002 KG years. I still think KG was way better in those years, but it was like he was putting up these crazy numbers. And, you know, Davis's numbers aren't that, but there's still, like, still numbers not many guys put up in the history of the game. And it's, you know, it is just going to kind of be like this forgotten season. Now, KG would still make the playoffs during those years. But I don't know. Like, it feels like we just wasted a pretty cool year from Anthony Davis.
Which sucks, especially because it really seemed like last year was progress. Yeah. And he's gotten so much better every year that a lot of us, myself included, thought, I mean, I picked him for MVP, so.
I don't think he's going to win MVP. I got to tell you that. I know we still have a little under half the season to go. I don't think he's going to win MVP. What do you think this does for Tyreek and his value? Like, I kind of thought he had some trade value before, and obviously he's not going to have trade value before this deadline because you're not going to acquire a guy who's out for the rest of the year. But maybe in the summer, do you think one, they'll try to move him, and two, do you think they can get decent return for him based on this injury?
I think it'll be really difficult too. I think the likelihood of him getting traded before the deadline before the injury was pretty high. I think it's clear that they need to shake up. And I'd say especially in the backcourt, if they can't, I mean, obviously if they can move Ashik, I'm sure they'll try.
Yeah.
But I think the backcourt has just kind of not necessarily been full of the most complimentary players for Davis the whole time. And he's, I mean, Evans maybe, like, I would have liked to see him being played more as like a three than he was played this year. I mean, he played a lot of point guard this year.
I don't know.
Which that, I didn't love.
I mean, I guess with Jrue Holiday looking pretty good now, and looking pretty healthy, you can experiment more with that. But I don't know that they had that luxury. And I don't know that it works. Like, I do think Tyreek's one of those guys. The ball has to be in his hands.
It has to be in his hands, but not necessarily all the time. And I thought, I mean, they had, I'm like the 100,000th person to mention this if you're on NBA Twitter every day, but they had a lineup which basically just featured all their best players with Jrue Holiday, Gordon, Evans, I think it was Davis and Ryan Anderson, that's like been consistently good and like never plays together.
Yeah.
And that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I mean, I don't want to put this season on the coaching staff, and I don't want to ignore all the injuries that the team has had throughout the year too. I mean, it's more than an injury issue now, but they started off so terribly. They never found a rhythm, and it does feel like a waste. It feels completely like a waste, and it started feeling like, honestly, a few weeks into the season, like this could end up being a waste, and I think it's unfortunate, but Davis will learn from this, and hopefully the front office learns from this and they make some changes between now and next year too. And to answer your original question, like, yeah, I think the value for Evans in the summer is going to be pretty low, but that doesn't mean you don't explore trades for him. It doesn't mean you don't try to tinker, you don't try to listen to Gentry and see what kind of players will actually fit in his system, because I think if you're designing a roster for how he wants to play, it wouldn't be this roster.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, I have four more items I want to get to very quickly because I know you got to go.
Okay.
One, Blake Griffin is suspended for 4 games by the Clippers for the whole punching the equipment manager thing.
And then that little thing,
and then I believe his pay for a fifth game is being withheld.
Right.
It sounds like everyone worked together on this, and this is like the best conclusion. So I guess it's good that this is now done until he's back, right?
I'm ready to completely forget about this.
Yeah.
I'm ready to never talk about it again.
Sure, me too. My second... Go ahead.
No, like, it was a mistake. It should never have happened, and they'll move on. He'll come back. He'll play really well. And the conversation will change to how great of a player he is. And I'm sure he'll have to talk about it, and he'll say that he was embarrassed and he's learned from it and whatever. But I'm not about to really get on a high horse about this. And I'm not about to be like, yes, I'm so glad they punished him, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, a punishment was coming. He knew that. The world knew that. It's done. I'm glad.
Right.
Now, I hope he gets actually fully healthy enough for this season to matter.
Second item, the Warriors are good.
Really?
I don't think we understand how stupid this 47-4 record is. Like, it's that's just dumb. 47-4 is ridiculous.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
No, this is just, it's never happened. So this is just stupid. 47-4 is really dumb. My third
last break they had last night was like,
oh, sick.
The in-game equivalent of 47-4.
It was sick.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Third item. This is from a Complex article. It's about Eric Pincus talking about Kobe Bryant. And in there, he's, at one point it says, Eric is for those who don't know, LA Times writer. He says, there was this one thing years ago. I had two girls and we were talking about, he's talking about him with Kobe. He said, there was this thing years ago. I had two girls and we were talking about how we were going to try to have a third. And he told me that to have a boy, I need to keep my socks on with my wife. That was his advice.
What?
I did not listen and I have a third girl. So I don't know. I don't know.
How did I miss this? What?
I just saw it today as we were podcasting. So I made sure to bring that up for
Wait,
you.
I have so many questions.
Yeah. So keep your socks on during that, that old intimate time with the wife.
If you want a boy.
If you want a boy.
Kobe told him this.
Apparently.
And he,
well, Kobe doesn't have any boys.
Yeah, I don't... What is going on here?
So I'm not... Ooh, I don't know about that. Kobe has two girls, right?
Uh-huh.
So how would he know? Maybe he's just a socks-off guy, and that's his theory.
I don't want to touch this one.
Hey, man, shoot or shoot. And then the last one, this is one I really want to talk to you about. So Skype and Paul McCartney are collaborating.
Skype and you and I are collaborating right now as
right.
well.
Skype and Paul McCartney are collaborating to create audio emojis. Apparently.
Please explain.
All right.
Say so much more about this.
It's going to be a group of 10 moving emoticons. These animated characters wiggle and gyrate to short chords of non-lyrical music or the occasional doo-dee-doo-dee from Sir Paul himself. They're timed to Valentine's Day because who wouldn't want to receive a flirtatious banana emoji that peels off its own fibrous skin on Valentine's Day?
Who wrote that?
This is from The Verge. Lauren Good at The Verge.
That's a great sentence.
So, like, if I just randomly, like, let's say you and I are Skyping for a podcast, and I, like, do the sweet air guitar riff where I'm like, nee, 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 nee. Like, are you going to then see some moving emoticon, like, pelvic thrust at you? Like, I don't understand how this is a thing.
So this is exclusively to Skype?
Apparently.
I want to know, well... Is it available yet?
All right, let me get through.
Oh, we need this because Valentine's only a few short days away.
Yeah. The inclusion of culturally relevant and celebrity-branded content is clearly part of Skype's larger strategy. Uh-huh. Skype doesn't break... that doesn't make any sense. The new love emojis become available on Skype today and are free.
Whoa.
I don't know how to do this. How do I send you...
I want to do it right now.
How do I send you like a thrusting whale emoji.
I'm trying right now.
But you have to, like, play music. Non-lyrical music.
I think... Introducing... Oh, here we go. Wait, these are videos. Hold on. Are they called emojis?
Maybe.
Hold on.
Yeah, they're called emojis.
I just sent you one.
Did you?
Yeah, it's of somebody who's very close to your heart.
Oh, it's The Rock.
Yeah. Does it work? That is gonna go to work.
I don't know if they saw the audio just now, but or if the audio showed up on the podcast. I guess I'll have to figure that out. But
I really hope it did.
Yeah, if so, it was The Rock saying "Daddy's got to go to work" and then flexing out of his cast. Well, that's not a thing. That's not this.
This is not what you were talking about.
No, but this is fantastic.
This is a thing, also, but it is not. A group of smiling...
This is a pig?
Goodbye, Fern. Hurry back.
I okay. found a minion.
Can you hear these when I play them?
No.
Okay, so then this is just for me, so it's not going to show up on the podcast, so that doesn't...
That's terrible.
That's not great. But it was Babe the Pig. Or no, it was Charlotte's Web?
For you, the listener, we went back for some post-production and decided to put the audio of these little things, whatever they are, into the podcast.
I just saw a pig and I clicked it. Okay, I don't know.
And then a minion.
I figured we'd control the pigs, and then I figured, yeah, a minion.
Okay, sure. All right. But they can't hear any of these. These are, all right, well, these are fantastic, but these are not what they're talking about.
No. Maybe I've messed up. I don't know.
Well, you're supposed to play non-lyrical music.
Yeah, that's not what this is.
Yeah. And then I don't know about gyrating. I don't need emojis to gyrate.
Yeah, who requested that?
Apparently Paul McCartney.
Like, was Skype getting a bunch of feedback?
Yeah, who approached who here? Or who approached whom, I guess.
Who approached whom? Just always use whom, that's a rule.
No, I don't think that's the rule. Paul McCartney...
No, it should have been whom's the boss.
I don't think that's true. Paul McCartney, go to Skype, or does Skype go to Paul McCartney?
I think Skype absolutely goes to Paul McCartney.
I don't know. Paul's wily.
You think Macca is just walking around like, who am I going to talk to today? I'm going to get a meeting with Skype. And then I'm going to try to find a t-shirt cannon.
Yeah. That guy. He's good at catching the t-shirts. I'll say that. Although I kind of think they aimed at him.
Yeah, probably.
How far away does he have to be safely in the t-shirt cannon perimeter without, like, getting pelted with one?
That's a really good question. I honestly think he never leaves the t-shirt cannon perimeter.
Yeah, no, he's
just living his life.
He may be that guy, like, there's that guy at baseball games who, like, has caught, I don't know, 20 home runs or something like that. He just runs to the spot. Maybe that's Paul McCartney with the t-shirt cannon. It's weird to think one of the most famous people in the world loves t-shirt cannons, but I guess
they're irresistible.
That's what he and I have in common.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. Well, he still hasn't figured out these emojis, but...
No. I mean, we screwed that up in a big way.
We'll definitely get there. Subscribe on iTunes. 4 or 5-star reviews. You guys know the drill. Tweet us with the hashtag EOBpod. James, always a pleasure.
Thank you. Hey, you're fired.